All right, folks, welcome to the On Par podcast. Pleased to be joined by Michael Clayton of OCCM. Today we're going to be talking about my favorite major of the year, the Open Championship at Carnoustie. And this week we decided to, in this episode, instead of our typical architectural series, we thought we would take a architectural preview of Carnoustie Golf Links. Mike, thank you for joining me today.
Thanks, Daphne. It'll be interesting to talk about Carnoustie. I've played there a few times, mostly, in fact, always unsuccessfully. So,
yeah,
we'll see what we come up with.
Yeah, you know, I think that. To start, let's assume what I'd like to do is just sort of go hole by hole. I mean, you as an architect, and just sort of talk about. We could talk about either some interesting features or design strategies or whatever the case may be, and. For the sake of argument, let's just assume that the, for argument's sake, the wind is going to be, the prevailing wind is out of the east there. So I'll give you, when I tell you the hole and we'll go through it and we'll just assume and what the wind is doing. Let's just assume it's the prevailing wind. I know that's not always the case, but they call it a prevailing wind for a reason. So we'll take a look at the first hole. The first hole is called Cup. It'll be a, again, off the a right to left wind, second shot. It'll be, again, a little bit into off the right. And it's sort of a, you know, it's a handshake, one of those, what they call a handshake opening holes. Really not a lot going on. The only thing I could see, and I have not been on the ground, it seems like if you go down the right side, it seems like there's a, it's a little bit of a blind shot. To the green, there's a little bit of a hill there. I'm not exactly sure, but what are your thoughts on the hole? It plays about 406 yards.
Yeah, it's an easy hole, really, unless it's against the wind. But
right,
you want to drive down the left because the green, the green's down in a bowl.
Right.
So if you go to the right, you're playing over those two bunkers at the front right of the green. But it's a green you can run the ball on. It's staggeringly, Tiger's been known his career for hitting some terrible shots off the first tee, but none more terrible than the 2-iron into the burn on, I think, the second day of the Open.
Yeah.
2007. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Staggeringly bad shot. And I think he, what did he finish a couple? Was he
he didn't finish too far behind, actually.
And that was a staggeringly nervous and bad iron shot into that burn. It was almost, I mean, no one's ever thought of that.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, not a particularly complicated hole. I think that without not wanting to race ahead, you can race ahead on this golf course. And you know when you go on the first tee that at the end of the day, you're going to play four of the hardest holes you've ever played.
Right.
So you've got four, you've got 14 holes to get organized and get your score organized so that you're not playing those last four holes under. You know, if you're trying to save a 72 or a 73 by playing the last four holes, there are a lot of blokes who've got there and walked off with 75s and sixes.
Right, right.
So it's the course very much starts obviously at the first hole, but you've always got in the back of your mind that I've got those last four holes to play and I need to get organized early. So this is not a hole you want to make a five on if you can help it, because it's not a hole you should be making five if you're a world-class player.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting you said that, and I'll get to number two in a second, but it sort of, this course does have that kind of sawgrass, right? The 17th hole is the thing you're sort of thinking about, right? Because you know, I mean, that's only obviously one hole versus four, but I bet a lot of guys, you know, when they step onto the first tee, they're already thinking about 17, and this is a major championship where you're thinking about, man, I gotta get after it when I can get after it, because it's going to be just... Hold on until it bucks, unless it bucks you off on coming on down the stretch.
Which is often the way of Troon and the courses that go out and back. Troon and St Andrews a little bit.
Right.
You can shoot 32, 42. You go out downwind and it's easy and you come back into the wind and every hole seems like it's the hardest hole you've ever played. So it's, this is not so much like that because the course tax the wind from lots of different directions or over the course of the round, but yeah, you know that finish is brutal, so you don't want to, you know, get off to a bad start because you'd be grinding pretty
hard. That's for sure. All right, number two is Gully, 463 yards. Wind will be right to left, maybe helping a touch. Lots of stuff. Obviously, Braid's bunker is not going to be in play, I don't think, unless obviously the wind changes and it's brutal. But there are a couple of bunkers down there you gotta sort of maneuver through. And I mean, I guess the bigger guys could blow it over everything with the wind helping, but pretty narrow down there. So, and with a fiery golf course, you'd be taking a pretty big chance with the big stick, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been there for a while, so I'm not sure if they've. I was last year at the Open, so 2007. So it's been 10 years since I've been there. So you never quite know where they've jammed back tees in. But in fact, no, I played the Senior Open there. When was that? Yeah, that was. Yeah, I've forgotten. John Huggan caddied for me. I played the Senior Open there where. 2010 or 11, maybe. You're picking it through those two bunkers there that are kind of 260 or 270 off the tee. And of course, we've all seen, I assume everyone's seen how dry Britain is this year. I mean, every picture of every golf course you see, the fairways are dead brown.
Yeah.
So, not literally dead, but they're brown. And the ball's going to be running forever. So, it'll be interesting to see how the golf course plays because. This is a hole where the further down the fairway you go, the narrower it gets. So it's going to depend on whether guys hit driver or not. Depends on how thick the rough is.
Right.
And
what do you think from a... Sorry.
As always on a links, you want to stay out of the bunkers. That's kind of the critical thing about playing these courses. You've got to stay out of the bunkers because you don't hit the greens out of them, generally. I mean, Miller lost the Open in 75 when he tried to knock it on the green out of the fairway bunker on the right of 18. And in fact, his second go, he did get on the green or just on the edge, but they're killers, the bunkers here. American golf kind of got away from the concept of, and Australia too, in a sense, of bunkers being just penal hazards.
Yeah.
But links bunkers on, pot bunkers on links courses are generally just penal hazards that cost you a shot. You treat them like a water hazard, just get out and move on.
You like, is this...
If you try anything more, you're taking a big risk.
How do you like the design of this hole? I think it's kind of a cool-looking hole. I mean, I like the... and that.
But that's a really good-looking hole. Yeah, it's fun. Yeah, it's a cool green with kind of bank, a big bank on the right of the green. And
yeah.
It's a pretty hole to play. It's a good, strong hole. There's lots of good things about this hole.
What do you like most about it?
I like the second shot more than the tee shot. The tee shot's, it's a decent tee shot, but it's a beautiful looking second shot.
Right.
That green down there. So it's a, and it just, it's asking you, you got to pick a drive through the bunkers there and then just hit a good iron. And of course, we could say it 18 times over, but we won't, that the conditions and the weather has such an influence on these holes. You can play them one day, and it'll be a drive and a wedge, and the next day it's a drive and 2 iron.
Yeah, right. Right.
There's a bunker that you can't imagine why the hell's that bunker there, and the next day you come along and the thing's into the wind. It's like actually a pretty decent hit to get over that. So while that bunker in the middle of the fairway is only maybe 220 yards off the tee, there are days when you don't want to miss your drive. All those guys will get over it, but it's a 220 yards into a 40 mile an hour cold rainy wind is a awfully long way, but. Seems like it's one of those summers in Britain that just sits there and doesn't change. My experience there was that if they had a good summer going, it didn't change much. It just, that good weather pattern set over the country for a long time. And once you had a decent summer going, it stayed there for most of the year. So it looks like it's going to be, I think we can assume the weather's going to be pretty good, but.
All right, number three.
Doesn't look like it's going to start pouring.
Nah.
Number three is a little hole, really.
Yeah. Jockey's Burn. Little 351, par 4. Got two little bunkers on, I guess you could say almost in sort of like a cross bunkering, I guess, if you will. But, it's an interesting, you've got the burn left. So you're sort of, it's an interesting attack there. You can either play it right down the middle and then just, to the burn and then take it, or you can try and go over the two little bunkers, but then you got to sort of worry about a fast and bouncy fairway if you're going to, it might reach the might reach the burn. So an interesting choice right off the bat.
Yeah, I think it was Harrington who tweeted about driving into the burn on the 18th hole, which is 480 yards away.
Yeah.
This is a hole where I've always just hit an iron up between the bunkers, which is off the back tee. It's about 220 yards.
Right.
And from there, it's just a pitch with a wedge. But, you know, it would look like it, trying to carry those bunkers, if guys are driving into the burn at 18, anything that carries those bunkers is going to run into the burn there. So.
Right.
They might. You know, this could be a 7-iron wedge hole this week.
Be interesting if it plays into the wind, then it might favor them to maybe try to carry the bunker because they can still carry the bunkers,
maybe,
but then the wind will hold it up, that it'll land a little more softly.
Yeah, it's just always sort of struck me as a hole where you played where you kind of played it where it looked obvious to play it, which was short in between the bunkers, and now it's a 120 yard pitch shot.
Right,
it's just not a hole that you want to mess with. And if you get a decent tee shot, you clearly you can, with a wedge or 9-iron, you can expect to get it reasonably close to the hole.
I feel like it's a hole that a lot of guys can fall asleep on.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to pay attention.
Yeah,
what's going on? As with every hole at Cunners, you got to be paying attention to what's happening. There are always those. At every hole, there's a pot bunker you can hit it into that's going to cost you a shot.
Right.
So you got to stay out of them at all costs, which was Tiger's genius at the old course, 2000, when he didn't go in one of them.
Yep.
So as always at the Open, a big, not so much at Birkdale but last year, but here, a big part of the test is staying out of those bunkers.
Yeah. It's just I think a well-designed little short hole.
Yeah, it's a terrific hole. Really, yeah. A terrific hole. Clever, and, you know, there'll be some guys who'll make some birdies there. But, and again, it goes back to the psychology of the golf course.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to be messing holes like that up because there's the finish coming up.
Yeah.
Which is a long way off at the third hole, but.
No, but you, but like.
Emphasize enough, Ham. But how much that's in the back of the mind of everyone who plays this golf course is, I need to get this done early, and
No, but yeah, but to your point, if you screw up 1 and 3, now you got you got problems. All right, number four here we got Hilix. Hilix is a 412 yard par four. Nothing. You got a double green. You got the burn down the left hand side. Interesting.
Which is not really in play. It's just a left or right.
It's kind of a gentle.
It'd be interesting to see if anyone hits it down the 15th fairway to the right. I think a couple of guys I've known in the past have tried that tack, which is, I'm not sure if that's a sensible. Well, it's just two parallel holes where you might find someone whacking it down that fairway.
Yeah.
With a driver. But, it's a left-right hole, bunker left, bunker right. Normally some reasonably thick rough on the right, double green with 13.
Yeah.
And you can kind of cut a 2 or 3 iron off the tee there and knock it on with a short iron. But, do you take a driver and whack it all the way up there? Or, that's going to be the fun thing to watch this week is how the players tackle holes like this and, whether you take the, as I assume Tiger's going to do, take the iron and plot the way around this golf course, the way you got around Hoylake, or do you take a driver and blast away? And the take the driver and blast away approach, which was the one that Ernie Els and Sergio adopted at Hoylake.
Right.
Tiger took him apart from 50 yards behind them because he never hit into trouble.
Yeah.
And Tiger played with a lot of pressure on him that week because he gave – every hole he was giving those guys 40, 50-yard start after the tee shots. So that was a masterful performance in discipline and sticking to a plan and staying out of trouble.
And
that was a genius week that I thought.
And it was. And the discipline of, like you said, the discipline of hitting the – of sticking to the plan, but also – I mean, he must have wore out the face of that four iron. I mean, he had a four iron, it seemed like, into every hole, I think. At the, and, you know, it's easy to skank one up, you know, every once in a while. But he was just precise and surgical, and
it was
impressive. Very impressive.
Yeah, I watched those last 36 holes there. They were, it was incredibly impressive stuff.
Yeah.
Amazing. That was everyone talks about Hogan in 53 at Hoylake, but, and I suppose Tiger in 2000 was a pretty genius effort too, but the way he played it, sorry, Hogan at Carnoustie in 53, but the way Tiger took apart Hoylake in 2006 was a equivalent genius performance, I thought.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it gets enough credit, to be honest with you. A lot of people talk about, you know, Pebble Beach and Masters and all that stuff and those big wins, but I think Hoylake is one of his masterpieces, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Just
the
strength of mind.
Well, it was because he beat, at Pebble Beach and St. Andrews, he didn't beat anybody. He was just playing against history there. But
right.
But here at Hoylake, he was playing with Ernie and playing with Sergio, and they were legitimate contenders, and he just blew them away. He just made them look second rate, but he certainly blew them away with his genius that week.
Made him look really small, that's for sure. All right, number five, a 415-yard, it's called Bray. So, obviously, the wind, this one, though, we got another burn to contend with down, about 300 yards off the tee. So not particularly. You like this hole? You like the design of this hole?
Double green. It's a big, long double green. It was where Hogan chipped in on he missed the green here and chipped on the last day and chipped it in.
Yeah.
So it's a big, long double green.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just did I see somewhere that Tiger hit a 7-iron off this tee that day in a practice round?
I think you're right. Yeah.
It doesn't sound like very much club, but. Yeah, you know, it's hit the fairway, hit it on the green.
Well, you know,
complicated. you've got to hit the fairway, and you've got to hit a good iron shot into the green. And of course, as not belaboring the point, but the conditions entirely dictate how this hole is going to play and how far is the ball bouncing, how hard is the fairway, where's the wind.
Yeah,
and like every links hole, it can be 7-iron, 9-iron, or it can be 3-wood. 3-wood 4-iron, but we're assuming this week, for the sake of an argument, that it's not going to be playing particularly long because of the conditions.
You know, not demoralizing, but if I was looking at it, if you and I were looking at this and going hole by hole, and we were looking at it as like, well, let's look at, you know, how, you know, if I said, hey, Mike, I need you to come up with a strategy for me to help me play Carnoustie, you know, we would be talking about not just different clubs, but like, you know, obviously different clubs, but you know, that, you know, me trying to hit, you know, a 3-wood or a driver down between those two bunkers, I don't know how wide it is between those bunkers down there, but well, I mean, from the back tee, I guess it's not that much, 220, so maybe it's a 5-wood, depending on the wind or so, or hybrid. But still, you still got to navigate those two bunkers. I don't feel like it's not to say that we're not going to see pros in them, but I almost feel like that they're not even concerned, really. Whereas I'm looking right at those two things, you know.
Well, my assumption is that most guys would just, how far are the bunkers away, and you take a club that won't reach them. So you're looking at maybe 230, 240 yards, depending where the tee is. But,
right. And then,
plus the burn's there. Yeah, the burn's right. 30 yards further on. So you're really playing short of that left bunker and going from there, from that left bunker up into the green is, you know, it's 165 yards to the middle of the green. So it's a.
Yeah, I guess this is the one hole where.
Is now.
I guess it's the one hole where short hitters or long hitters aren't really making the course longer for themselves because it's only about, like you said, 160, 165 into that bunker, into the middle of the greens from those bunkers. So,
yeah.
I have a feeling they, you know, some of the long guys can make the course longer by laying way back, a la Tiger at Hoylake. But this is probably not a hole that's needs much more of our attention. I think it's short enough for everybody to sort of lay back and have a flip in there, whatever it is. All right, number six, Hogan's Alley. So 578-yard par five. I don't see
This is a famous hole here, really.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess the burn, I mean, you know, depending on the wind, you know, you got to blow it over those two bunkers and then, you know, and see how far it chases down, I guess.
Well, except the out of bounds is hard up against the left. So,
yeah.
And there is no rough. I mean, there's, you know, there's short grass and a white wire fence and,
yeah, pretty tight.
Under there, and you're reloading it. So I mean, obviously Hogan, the legend, was it? He drove it down the left four times in a row, down between the bunkers, and which is a pretty gutsy shot to hit.
Yeah.
So on the tee, you're making a choice of whether you play the hole in two shots or three. You can lay out short of those bunkers off the tee with a whatever you want to hit, four iron or something, and then you can go with another three or four iron, and then you can pitch it on with what you got left, or you can try and drive it on. But, you know, Nicklaus hit it out of bounds here in 68, which in the end might have, what did he finish? Two shots behind Gary Player.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he was, it's a gnawing, ever present threat that if you pull it, there's that boundary all the way down the left.
Right. The sort of the, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but yeah, that's, The strategy is dominated by that and the two bunkers right in the middle of the fairway.
Right.
And then two bunkers further along. So you're playing short of everything, you're playing down the left or you're playing down the right. And it's an interesting hole to watch guys play because there are lots of choices off the tee. And, you know, that's why it's one of the great par fives in golf, really.
Yeah, the OB and the burn really sort of put that doubt in your mind. That's for sure. It certainly makes you a little think twice about driver. That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean no courses in the world do the out of bounds hazard better than the Lynx courses in Britain. The 14th at Royal St George's, the boundary at St. Andrews, all those holes down the boundary at the 14th at St. Andrews and 16 and 17 and 18 and 6 at Carnoustie, there's that. They use that out-of-bounds line in Hoylake, obviously, very mm-hmm. well. You know, it's a scary part of golf over there. And whilst you don't hit the ball out of bounds very often, you make a lot of mistakes because of it. And the 18th green, too, it's a... You know, going back to what Vandeveld did in 99, the only way he could lose that tournament was hit the ball into the long grass short of the burn, out of bounds on the left. So he did what I thought wasn't that silly, really, just take a two iron and blast it over everything. And, you know, as long as you were right of the flag, you were fine.
Yep.
Just happened to get the worst bounce in history off the grandstand.
I know. And that's crazy.
Off the, you know, but again, you could argue that the out of bounds had something to do with that because he knew he couldn't go left.
Yeah, no, that was well. We'll get to that. We'll get.
You
know,
he just blasted out to the right. Yeah, we'll get there. But the point is.
The point is that
out of bounds is used as a very scary hazard on almost every links course in Britain.
Yeah, and you're right; they are used effectively, and there's. Well, it's OB all the way down the left of number seven, Plantation, 410-yard par four. You know, from an architectural standpoint, doesn't seem to be that. You know, I don't know. One of the things that's difficult having not been there is that I don't get an appreciation for the elevation change and if there's, you know, the contouring of the fairway. I don't know if the fairway slopes right to left or left to right. You know, it's very difficult to get a sense of it. So, like, just like looking at it from an aerial, just looks like a sort of, you know, I know that obviously I can see OB on the left-hand side. but I don't see any fair. It's hard to tell with a fairway pitch, so I don't. So it's hard for me to imagine. Like, are these guys trying to hit cuts in there to hold that fairway? What are they doing? So it's just sort of the only things I could see is it's OB and it's narrow. You know what I mean?
And it's pretty flat.
And it's flat.
Yeah, there's not a lot to this hole, really.
Yeah,
it's flat. Yeah, it's not. It's just again, it's the bunkers and the. But it's yeah, it's flat and it's just a. Again, it's just a hole that's. If you mess it up, it's annoying and but it's easy to do.
It's fun. You know,
again, that keep it out of the bunkers and. But nothing complicated.
Right, except that it's a major championship.
Yeah, and you better hit it down. Again, what we don't know because we're not there is that can you take a driver and hit it 400 yards down that fairway?
Yeah.
Is the ball going to run 100 yards and you finish up with a pitch shot onto the green?
Right.
That's what's going to be interesting to watch this week. From afar, it looks like, can you resist the temptation to try that shot? If you know that you can get it out that far,
right?
Can you stay on that tee and resist the temptation to pull your driver out? Because you know that if you hit a good one, you've got nothing left here,
right? I mean, certainly,
you're 20 yards off the green potentially. So, do you take that chance and can you pull it off 4 days in a row on 13 or 14 holes, or do you just take the iron out and play smart and? That's going to be the interesting part of the test is that can the long hitters resist the temptation to drive it up around the greens?
Yep, well, that'll be the test.
And, if not, how do they play it and where do they play it?
Number eight is short.
So,
go ahead.
I was going to say it's not – you've played 4, 5, and 7, which are three – not dissimilar holes in terms of how they play.
Right.
You've got to hit the ball onto the short grass and hit it on the green, which sounds very easy, but that's the test. And Carnoustie's, I think it was Tom Doak who said it's a course that's ruthlessly efficient at finding a man's weakness, and it's very good at that.
Yeah, and I think
I
was just going to say that's what you're talking about, like the mental, the mental side of it is because here I am, I bring you on and I'm ready to waiting for you to say, I love this hole from an architectural standpoint. I love the way this is, and that. And yet we've described three holes that are like vanilla, which is fine. Like not every hole is going to be a signature hole. I get that. But it is part of the test, the fact that you're going to have to deal with these sort of benign holes without being overly greedy because they are benign or appear to be benign.
Yeah, and I think it was Herbert Warren Wind who described Oakmont as an ugly brute after the 1962 US Open. And no one would describe Carnoustie as a pretty golf course.
Right.
It's not the most charismatic town. It's a grey Scottish town, great dark stone, and it's not it's certainly not St Andrews or North Berwick in terms of charm. But it's and nor would you describe the golf course as pretty. It's not a pretty golf course, but it's just very difficult. And so if we're not sort of gushing over, well, this is a great hole, it's in part that's because perhaps it's not they don't have the undulations, or they're not it's not a pretty hole, or it's not unbelievably charming, or it's just a doer, foreboding, difficult golf course. And whilst it's not full of holes that you immediately jump on the tee and say, well, this is a great hole, it's just full of solid golf.
Yeah,
that asks really interesting questions.
Well, short brings us to number eight, which is short, and that's an interesting question because that'll be kind of 183 yards, pretty intimidating. I would think it looks kind of the intimidation will be so obviously in the wind and what's going on there, but I don't know. Is that like a, not, I'm not saying it's blind, but you, there's a little room short, but I'm not sure you could see it from the tee. I don't know how far that, I don't know if it's because it's elevated. Does it look, is that more of a look intimidating, or is it just to flip eight iron for these guys and moving on their way?
No, it's a small grain.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Up in the air a little bit. Watson, Tom Watson in the playoff, I think, with Newton. Was it the playoff where he pulled it and hit, hit one of the out of bounds posts? And
down, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I remember that. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a small kind of green up in the air a little bit, bunkers on both sides. And it's one of those holes where you either hit a good shot and get on the green, or you don't hit a good shot and you don't get on the green.
Yeah.
And
right.
I always think a good mark of it, what a mark of many of the really good par threes of this length is, they don't really accept a marginal shot. You know, if you've hit a marginal shot, more often than not, it misses.
Right.
You've just got to hit a good shot here.
Is that a...
And if you don't, you miss it.
Is that a false front kind of situation in the front of that green, or is it not? I can't tell, to be honest. I don't know how tiered that green is. I don't know if you remember from when you were...
I don't.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I just, it was just interesting. Hard to tell from the...
Yeah, the green's
the,
up, yes. Yeah, so there's a bank in front of it. Really.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
So it's like a two-tiered green there. So I guess
well,
they get...
Well, it's not two-tiered, but...
Oh, it's not two-tiered, okay.
Yeah. There's a bank at the front, yep.
Okay. All right, number nine.
Steve, I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead. You want to take a look? Yeah, I was just so it's hard to tell sometimes.
I'm just trying to. I've got a bunch of photos here, which I number nine. Yeah, number nine's a Jack Newton told a story. Obviously, Jack played well there and lost a playoff to Watson in 75, and he played a practice round, which he often talks about with. Nicklaus and Weisskopf.
Okay.
And Weisskopf had a 4-iron out at this hole, the ninth hole. And so why are you hitting a 4-iron off this tee for, Tom? He said, because Jack is. I figure if Jack's hitting a 4-iron, that's the right club. That's what I'm doing too. I'm just doing what he's doing.
That's brilliant. Yeah. 478 yard. This is a big hole. Nicklaus's bunker, 310 yards, maybe off the tee there, off the right. And again, another tight area with OB and trees on the left. So this is a tight. This is another. Well, I have a lot of holes are tight here, and actually there's the burn all the way on the right if you really blow it right. So another fun little tight little corridor you got to maneuver through.
Yeah, it's again bunkers both sides. Avoid the bunkers because they're bogey, and it's kind of a little down to the green. Perhaps the shot, you kind of want to run the ball onto the green.
Okay.
Again, bunker front left, bunker front right, flat green, playing into the pine trees behind it. And some houses on the other side of the pine trees over where the 10th tee is. But again, it's not a complicated hole if you hit the ball in the fairway.
Yeah.
And it's a flat kind of run into the green.
Yeah.
And if you want to land the ball 30 yards short with a pitch and run shot, you can do that. I mean, it's often a pretty effective way to play these golf courses, you just pitch and run the ball around them. And certainly, whilst you can't do it at the next hole because there's a burn in front of the green here, you can see someone, if they've got the imagination, you know, from 140 yards, taking out a 4-iron and just chipping the ball on the ground onto the green.
Yeah.
It's not that complicated a shot, but you won't see guys doing it. But it's when you go out there and try it, it's remarkable how easy it is.
Yeah, I mean, you just got
to... Just one hole where you can do it because it's, you know... There's nothing in front to complicate it.
Yeah. I mean, provided you know how to, you know, you got to still, if you're going to take it low, you still have to navigate those two, which is not like you said, it's not a complicated. You guys still have to execute it, though. That's for sure.
Yeah, you've got to hit it straight. Yeah, but between those two bunkers at the front.
All right, number 10, 466-yard par 4, South America. Forgot the names of the other. I didn't give our listeners the names of the other ones, but I can go back there later. But straightforward. You got to navigate those bunkers. You got three on the right, again, one on the left, yep. And the burn short of the green.
Down the right and one down the left. So again, it's at this point you've got bunkers in the middle of the well. There's a short bunker in the middle of the second. There are bunkers in play at the third in the middle and. And obviously the bunker's at six, but here again, it's the same test as the previous hole. It's like hit it between the bunkers.
Why, just from an architectural standpoint, and you can easily just say no particular reason, and I would totally understand that. But why the choice for three bunkers on the right there? Like, is there any kind of is that just visual intimidation as opposed to? Just one bunker and a lot of rough, or what? You know, those little things that you guys do, little subtle, nuanced intimidation factors. You know what I mean?
Well, they're on a diagonal, so if you had a short, weak cut, you get in the first one, and of course, the wind determines whether the bunkers are in play or not.
Right.
So they're on a diagonal. So the short bunkers on the right. And like the further up you go, the narrower the fairway gets. So, the short bunker catches the weak portion, and then you can actually hit a pretty decent shot into that last bunker,
right?
Because it starts to eat out into the fairway. So it's not as though they're in a straight line; they're on a diagonal from short on the right to long on the left. So the further down you go, the narrower it gets, which is what those bunkers do. Is that, the further down that fairway you go. The tighter it becomes because the way those bunkers sit.
I love the way.
And then there's the one down the left as well, which is.
Yeah, I love the way you describe that, though. I love the way you describe that. The way they, you're right. It's sort of those three bunkers now. It's like for the 20, 25 handicap, the 10 handicap, and the four, and the four handicap, like.
Yeah.
Because that's really what you're describing. Because the four handicap can still hit a little bit of a. If he pulls the ball a little bit or pulls it slightly right. I'm thinking everything is a left-handed golfer because I'm a lefty. But from a right-handed, if he just hits a little push cut and has the wrong wind, he's going to be in that first bunker on the that eats into the fairway. And like you said, the one all the way on the right is that big old weak banana slice. So, and if he hits the old big old draw. Then he or she, then you bring that bunker down the left hand side and into play, if the wind is helping you or whatever the case may be. So, very strategic. I like the way you described that.
Once you're in those bunkers, then the burn across the front determines what you do. You don't ever go for the green out of there.
Right.
You're just playing up short of the burn and then trying to get it up and down.
Are those sideways bunkers or are those bunkers where you can try to get a layup?
The bunkers by the green?
No, the bunkers in the diagonal bunkers. Can you still get a yardage to lay up before the burn, or are those bunkers you have to come out sideways?
As with all those bunkers, it depends which part of the bunkers you're in.
Okay.
If you're up against it. If you trickle in the front, then you can probably get it out some way, but if you're up against the face, then you're going out sideways.
Okay. So I wasn't sure if that was...
Yes, so it all depends on which part of the bunker you finish in. But if you're up against the wall, then yeah, you're going sideways.
Yeah, you're done.
Not sure if you saw Patrick Reed at Gullin last week.
I did,
did he take three or four out of that bunker?
He did, yeah.
I mean, the thing is, if you plug the thing in the face, as he did with that tee shot in the par three, and you try and get it out, the thing hits the wall and spits back and plugs again.
Yeah. Exactly.
So he made a great double bogey there. He got it up and down out of the bunker for five, right?
Yeah.
Three shots in the bunker, three in the bunker, yeah. Yeah, so you don't want to compound the error by taking on more than you should, which is always a temptation. You're always tempted to, maybe I can just get 50 yards more out of this than I should.
Right.
It's always unwise.
No, no, that's because we're always trying to march forward, you know, and so we hate to go backwards. Yeah. It's just the architect using that mentality against us. All right, number 11, John Philp, 383-yard par 4, bunkers, some heavy mounding and grassed areas down straight away. There's a quad bunkers, two in the... on the right, two on the left.
Two on the left, on the right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're
360. So, yeah, they're right in the layup area, really. And that's really what that is.
Yeah. Again, it's one of those holes where, again, we're laboring this point a bit, but do you take the iron out and run it up into the fairway there? It's not a long hole. I remember hitting sort of irons and nine irons here, so 2-iron, 9-iron, 3-iron, 9-iron. So it's, what do you take with a driver and hit the big cut and try and blast it up by the green? So
it's amazing.
Again, we don't know what they're going to do.
It's amazing that we're talking about a major championship and we're at hole number 11 and we've talked about three holes that are possibly drivable holes, drivable par fours, which is sounds strange, but when you realize it's the Open Championship, but it's not as strange, but and I didn't go back and look. I don't know what I'm not sure how the prevailing wind would affect those different holes that we kind of picked as possibly drivable, but the chances of all of them being drivable in the same round probably not very likely, but still we've talked about three potential drivable holes right off the get-go, so be interesting.
Yeah, it's not so much drivable, but driving it right up by the green, it up 50 yards short of the green on holes that are, well, I think in 99 they were hitting, I can't remember, but Vanderbilt made a long putt for something here, but a par or maybe a birdie, but on the last day, but yeah, it was it's a 2-iron, 9-iron hole, but
right
again we wait to see because we're not there, but if you can get the ball bouncing and as far as these guys hit it, you can probably drive it up pretty close to the green.
Yeah, try and get it in those green side bunkers.
50 or 60 yards of it.
Oh, yeah. I would think for sure. All right, so number 12, my favorite hole, my favorite named hole, Southwood Ho, named little A.W. Tillinghast that's not even a half mile from my house is a country club called Southwood Ho. Designed golf course. Which is actually going to go through some changes. They're bringing back a little bit of a master plan, so that'll be interesting. But this one is on the other side of the pond. It's 499-yard par 4. Burn runs around the right a little bit. You got those two little spectacle bunkers there to the on the right, on the right side with the burn, and then on the left is a little bit of high rough, and I guess a little piece of the burn there. I'm not exactly sure, but. So I'm just interested in you're right from an architectural standpoint, because it sort of looks like they want to give you this right side up to the up to these bunkers where it's about 470. It's about 260. There's only 25 yards, so maybe 280 to those bunkers, but which is obviously the wide side. So. I guess it depends on where the flag is on the particular day. Obviously, the wind and the flag, but I'm always interested when they give you that little extra wide area. I guess that's the sort of thing you see the wide area and you go towards, but you got to make sure you don't get in those bunkers.
Yeah, and the green's down in a bowl as well.
Okay.
Not unlike the first hole where it's kind of down below the level of the. There's a high point of the fairway short of the green, then it kind of goes down and. Big wide green, this one from memory.
It's only 26 paces or yards deep and very wide.
Yeah. This was a hole that everyone remembers Vanderveld's mess at 99, but this Craig Parry had the lead on this hole. And he got what looked to be a good bounce down the right. He missed the bunker on the right. He got a good bounce, and a friend of mine was coming for him.
Uh-huh.
And he got a good bounce down the, and he missed the bunker and got sort of some sort of line in the rough where he thought he could go at the green. Oh. If he'd been in the bunker, he just would have chopped it out and made five.
Right.
But he got a good enough lie to think, oh, I can have a go at this. And the club wrapped around the neck and it went straight left into the junk on the left, and he made seven.
Oh, my God.
And double bogeyed 17 and lost by one.
Hmm.
Having said that, he buried the last hole and Vanderbilt made seven. So he was five behind playing the last. But
right.
Parry was going to win. It was his tournament to win, I think, on the 12th hole. And if his ball had got the bounce it normally got and gone in the bunker, he probably would have won. But it missed the bunker and finished up in the grass. And he went for too much out of that, which is all, you know, again, we talk about the temptation of these places is you just, you know, you're not going to win if you don't take risks. But the temptation of these places is to go at something that you shouldn't. And Parry did it here and lost in 1999. He paid the price for it.
Yeah.
Sadly for him.
I was just going to say, but you know, but I guess if you want to win this championship, I think there's just going to be, there's going to be a bunch of shots that you're going to have to sack up and hit. I mean, there's just no other way to put it because this course is so demanding that even if you're in a, you may not even be in the rough, but you still have to, you might have to hit just a shot that you got to, where you put your big boy shrimp pants on and you're just going to have to hit it. I mean, it's just, it might be the wind, it might be the rain, who knows what's going on. But this course, you don't even have to be in the rough to have to sack up and hit a shot, you know? Yep. Which is interesting.
Yeah. Which was how, you know, that was what Tiger did at Hoylake, was that he, off the tee, he played incredibly conservatively, but every hole it was like, you've got to hit a shot now, and he just
pulled
it
off
one after another.
Yeah.
So, again, the interest will be this week is, how do you play this place? Do you do that, or do you take the driver out? It was a par five, I think, in 68 probably, and perhaps even in 75 when Watson and Newton played. But was it 499 yards? Is it how long it is? This hole? Did you say?
Southwood Ho was, it was 499, yeah.
499, yeah. So yeah. It's a kind of old-fashioned par five length, but
yeah.
It doesn't play that way because the ball bounces so far.
Yeah, and it's definitely going to bounce this week. All right, number 13, wins. A 176-yard par three, heavily bunkered, a little bit of an deformed hourly glass kind of shape to it, a little bigger at the back and a little tiny little bubble at the bottom. So not a lot of room anywhere on that one too.
Yeah, big tilt in the green from right high on the right down to the left. But
oh, yeah.
Not a particularly complicated shot. You know, there are three par threes here, right?
Yeah.
Three par threes here, yep. 8, 13 and 16. So this is the easiest of them. Having said that, 16 is the hardest par three in the world. So being the easiest par three at Carnoustie is not
saying much.
Describing a hole as being easy. But
right.
It's just easier than the other two. So it's,
that's pretty funny.
It's a short iron to a decent sized target. And again, it's the wind makes things difficult here, everywhere.
Yeah.
So if there's no wind, it's, you know, a hole that you'd see a bunch of twos. If it's windy, then you've got to get a controlled low punch through the wind, and it's not an easy shot. But no one's, you know, describing this as a difficult hole particularly.
No. 14, spectacles. I love the way this, I don't know what this, on paper it looks so interesting off the tee, obviously, and the second shot is, it's 514-yard par 5. But it's, you got lots of options off the tee there.
Yeah, there's more room on the right.
Yeah.
The bunker than the left, obviously, but. You can imagine how scary this hole would have been back in the day with a hickory shaft and not a very good golf ball where you were trying to fight over those two fearsome bunkers, holes named after, embedded in the hill. They're short of the green. I mean, now they all go, unless you drive into trouble, then you're laying up short of them. But it's,
Yeah,
it's not the scary shot it once was, but
right, I guess not.
Those bunkers are not in play, really.
Well, scary enough for me.
But it's a it's scary enough for the average player, but these guys will whip it over them, no problem. But this was the hole where player hit the shot, 1968, hit the great 3-wood to 3 feet, I think. Blind shot over the spectacles, knocked it onto 3 feet, and made the eagle, which was the difference between him and Jack, really.
Yeah.
That day. And then in the playoff, Watson and Newton chipped it up stiff for a 4, and Watson chipped in for 3. Went next and chipped it in for 3. And that was the difference in that match too, 71-72. Watson made the break here, or he made the eagle. So a couple of eagles decided two opens here, 68 and 75.
Tremendous.
But a birdie hole.
But
you need it, because then we get to the...
Well, now we're getting into it here.
About all day, which is the...
Yeah, number 15, lucky slap, 472-yard, par 4, sort of gentle little dog leg to the left, I guess you could describe it as. Lots of gorse down the right, heavy grass down the left. It seems to me that there's some... I don't know what the fairway looks like, but on the website, it kind of looks like a little bit of undulating there, and some. But you could tell me that more. Yeah, is there a little bit of pitch there?
Tips a little bit from right to left, and again, the green's down below the level of the high point of the fairway, short of the green.
Okay.
So if you're running it down onto the green with it, and the two bunkers short right, obviously you don't want to mess with those. But I remember watching on TV Colin Montgomery in a Scottish Open played from here 4 of the greatest holes I've ever seen. He literally ran 4 holes in a row. He ran long approaches. I think maybe a wood here. Certainly a wood at 16, 4 holes in a row. He ran the ball right within 6 feet of the hole as he ran it past it. It was an amazing golf.
Wow!
He won that tournament by going away, but it was the best run of 4 holes of golf I'd ever seen. It was incredible. Starting here with a long second that ran down the hill past the flag, and I don't remember what scores he made. He might have only made 4 pars, but. No one ever making 4 pars at the last 4 holes at Carnoustie look as easy as he did that day.
Yeah.
But again, as with the 12th and the second, the green down below the level of the fairway.
Yeah, that's... go ahead, I'm sorry.
Another good, solid hole. You know, you've just got to do what you got to do.
This a lot of these holes. This is the another one of those holes where the green was sunken down, and it seems to be you've described that a number of times. I'm just wondering, is that what was that? They just found that there, and is that was just the way it was, or how? You know, it seems like it's just a natural part of the land, but it seems like there's a number of holes where the greens are sort of sunken down. Yeah, kind of like that whole idea of that's where the sheep gathered together, together to make the greens or make the bunkers, but like that kind of idea. I don't know what it just seems like there's a number of holes like that.
There are. Well, assuming the alternative was to put the greens back up on top.
Right.
Shorten. On top where you can see the bottom of the hole, but that would shorten the first, it would shorten this hole, it would shorten the 12th by 50 yards in each case. And it's fair to say that the early forms of the game in Scotland the game has gotten much more conventional since then, where everyone thinks that everyone should, there's any blind shot is bad. You should always be able to see the bottom of the hole. You can't be. And you hark back to the Alps and the Himalayas hole at Prestwick and the hole where you pitch over the wall at North Berwick and how unconventional Scottish golf was or how it wasn't bound by convention, because there was no convention when they did those early courses.
Sure.
So the fact that you would build three holes down in a dell or a punch bowl further along the hole, there's a great one at Royal Cinque-Ports next to Royal St. George's. I can't remember the number. I should know, but perhaps a third or the fourth at Cinque-Ports, where they just built the green down low, the famous hole at Cruden Bay, the 14th or 15th, the bathtub green there.
Yeah.
So when they laid these courses out, they weren't bound by the convention of what's fair and what's predictable and what's consistent. And there was no notion of what the game should be.
Right.
It was all, you know, there's no reason why you can only see half the flag, but, well, that's no big deal.
Yeah.
I think I read yesterday where when Hogan played, of course, the flags this week at the Open will be, every flag will be the same height, but when Hogan played there, the flags apparently varied in height from 4 feet to 11 feet.
Right.
So you can imagine the flags on a hole like the first or the 12th, whether they were hidden down below the bunkers, where you have a massively tall flag so you can see the top of it from the fairway, but on other holes the flags weren't that tall at all. So what it does, it makes judging distance quite tricky, because obviously the shorter the flag, the further away it looks.
Sure. That messes with your depth.
So that was something that players in 1953 were dealing with that modern players were not. Of course, they had no yardage books either. But going back to the point, as we'll get to with the next hole, they weren't bound by convention. They just did what worked. And if you could make a hole 50 yards longer by moving the green back and down into a low spot where, you know, doesn't seem like they're even bothered about how the water got off the green. In some cases, if it rained, then the water might sit there. But they could have built the green 50 yards further forward and made a hole that was 50 yards shorter and a driving a wedge affair. But
yeah,
they moved it back and moved it down and created something pretty interesting.
Yeah, they sure did. You spoke of number 16, Barry Byrne, 250-yard par 3. Really interesting green complex. And it seems like there's a couple
long and narrow, long, narrow, and
a couple of little levels, maybe.
Did Sergio hit the flag here?
Yeah,
he did when he played
when the gods were against him.
He had a great shot in the playoff. Yeah, bounced off the flag. But yeah, this is a hole. Gil Hans likes to talk about holes on the edge of par.
Right.
It's really a 3.5 par.
Yeah.
Played this hole in 2 threes and 2 fours for the week, he'd be doing all right.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, this is a beast.
Long, difficult hole. It's not that difficult to get the ball up and down from around the green.
Mm-hmm.
You can miss it. The pitching and the bunker shots are not that complicated. You've got competent shots to get up and down. But
you know, it looks if the tees were on the right side of the tee box, it just seems like you could just hit like a little stinger right down the throat of it. You know what I mean? I mean, I know a lot of guys don't have the sort of there's a certain perception, I guess. I don't know, but it seems like it would be a hole you might want to just hit a couple of stingers right down the throat of it. I mean, and not have to worry about anything.
Yeah. Yeah, the 250-yard stingers, that's a long stinger.
But you know what I mean. I mean, it could be a 5-iron. It could be a 2-iron stinger. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, that low, hard, ripped, bouncing.
Yeah.
Whatever shot, you know, the stinger or the pitch and run with the 5-wood or the 2-iron or
right,
whatever. Yeah, it's a shot that you've got to hit it straight.
Right.
It's just, it's a narrow green. There's trouble both sides. It's like, the question is, can you hit a straight, long, as in 250-yard shot at the end of the round? It's a difficult shot, and you've just got to man up and hit a great long line shot. But if you were picking holes to par threes around the world where you absolutely had to hit the green to save your life, this is far, far, far down the list of holes you want to pick. It's a brutally difficult hole.
Yeah, there's nothing good here.
You would pick the 16th at Cypress Point before you'd pick this one. That's a pretty tough one as well.
I think I would.
It's got a big green.
I don't know. I think I need a little terra firma onto me. So I think I'm still going to go with this one before I go with that one.
Sticking this one?
Yeah, I'll stick with this one. Just, when I'm swinging, I'm still fairly proficient, but I'd like to just keep terra firma onto me. I don't need any big gaps of water. But
I understand that.
But all right, so number 17, obviously.
17's the island, yeah. Where you've got to carry one, but stay short of the other. So the burn kind of snakes across.
Yeah.
The first part of the fairway, so you've got to carry across that. Then it turns and cuts back across the second half. So you've got to play, well, you don't have to play short of that, but Nicklaus in 68 actually took driver out and carried it over the whole lot, which was a pretty amazing shot.
Yeah.
And pitched it on the green with the wedge. But it's generally an iron off the tee. Newton in 75 didn't take enough club and barely carried the first one.
Uh-huh.
And made a bogey, which kind of in the end cost him the tournament. But it's a tricky shot. You've just got to get the distance right. In fact, Andres Romero, remember? He finished out of that. He made a complete hash of this.
He was on the right side,
drove
right?
to the right, then yeah. pinned it.
Yeah.
Hit the rocks and went out of bounds. He made seven here or something.
Yeah, that's exactly what he did. He did. He hit it, he blasted it right. He was in the weeds, and then he hit the rocks in front of him, and it went OB.
Yeah, got it. And again, it was just, you know, the thing we've been talking about all pod is, you know, you just don't take on too much. Just take your medicine and get out of, you know, just
as
if he'd made the five, he might have been the champion that week.
I know maybe not particularly this hole, but when you look at this on paper, and obviously this is, you know, you might look at this and be like, you know, I hate when, you know, I played a golf course, just ran out for nine holes when I was in Maryland not too long ago. And there were a couple of holes where it just kind of forced you. It was just very unimaginative architecture where they kind of force you into the same spot, you know. It was like a par five, and it was impossible to carry. Like there was no risk reward, really, you know what I mean? And sort of, it was just the way the whole way it was. And but when you could easily look at this hole and be like, all right, well, everybody has to hit it onto this island. It's kind of not that interesting, but then you take into the real life account of it and it's a whole nother ball game.
Yeah, because the burn, the second part of the burn's on a diagonal.
Right.
So the ideal line into the flag is from the left because the two bunkers on the right.
Right.
But the shortest part of the burn to get into is the one on the left.
Yeah.
So you can play it long down the right because the burn's further from the tee, further to reach it. But then you've got the less than ideal angle. And again, this green's down under the fairway a little bit. And again, it looks like you want to land the ball short and bounce it up onto the green. So it's a, you know, by the time we've got to this point, we've decided that whilst there are a lot of holes that sound like they're going to play the same, you know, it'll be fascinating to watch how guys play them and whether they choose to play them all the same way or they choose to take some on and others not. And so it's going to be depending on how they feel or the state of the wind or how they're sitting in the tournament. So it's, you know, whilst it might, as I said, we've sort of spoken about a lot of the holes playing in a similar way. It doesn't mean you play them all the same, if that makes sense.
Sure. No, you definitely don't. But again, it's just sort of interesting use of the land and in this case, the burn. Really creative. And unlike the other holes, though, I would say this one is a little dicier to run it up there. That's a really tight corridor to run it up between those two bunkers, a little tighter than maybe some of the other holes. But again, that will be dictated by where you're coming from in terms of whether you're out of the rough
if you're
or
coming whatever. From the left. Of course, most guys don't come from the left because that's the hardest part of the fairway to get to. So in that sense, it's a classic strategic hole in terms of, not so much black and white, but the shades of gray. Every yard you play your T-shirt away from the ideal line, the less ideal is the line for your second shot.
Yeah.
And it's a green where you want to be running the ball on if you can, but you can only really run it on from the left.
Right, exactly. That's exactly right. All right, home hole 18, where I got my story screwed up. But this was just, and there's also Johnny Miller's bunker down there, down the way. But this hole has all kinds of history, and you alluded to earlier with Vandeveld, and you were right, though. I mean, it was one of the most unlucky breaks in championship history. I mean, the chances of hitting that piece of iron off the grandstand is, you know, I would say, you know, 9 times out of 10, I would say he was more than 9 times out of 10. I would say 99 out of 100 times, he's gonna, 500 times, he's gonna be able to get away with that shot. I mean, that was just craziness. But another architecturally interesting hole, though, with the Burns coming into play there.
It is. It's the last hole you want to play in a major championship. Really. I mean, we saw. I mean, did Harrington get up and down for six?
He got up and down. Yeah, in fact,
Harrington got up and down. Up and down for six.
From the other side of the burn.
Vandeveld got up and down for seven.
Yeah.
From the other side, Vandeveld got up and down for seven. Harrington got up and down for six.
Got up and down for six from the other side of the burn. I mean, that was a pretty lengthy pitch shot he had, Patrick had into that.
Yeah. What everyone forgets about it was Paul Laurie at the 72nd hole, bounced his second across the burn. He landed short of the burn, bounced over into the left bunker and got up and down for 67, which was an incredible score.
Yeah.
But the irony was that he landed short of it and bounced over, and Vandeveld carried it by 20 yards and finished up on the other side of it. So there was some bad stuff happening that day. Yeah, this is just a really difficult hole under normal conditions. I mean, Watson, I think Newton hit 2 iron here in the playoff with Watson, so driver 2 iron. When Player beat Nicklaus, it was a par 5. The tee was further back, and it was like it was 530 up par 5.
Right.
So subsequent to that, when Hogan won, it was a par 4. It was a par 5 when Newton won, lost. It's pretty much been a par 4 ever since, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But again, Harrington drove the ball in the burn in a practice round in front of the green.
Yeah.
What's it, for 450 yards?
He had a 5 iron, yeah. I think it was a 5 iron. He hit it fat and it didn't even make it
to the
burn.
No, in a practice round this week.
Oh, this week. Oh, yes. He drove it. Yeah.
Only a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
He drove it into the burn in front of the green, which is 456, whatever. Clearly, it makes it a pretty easy hole if you can take a driver and run it up 5 yards short of the burn.
Yeah.
You're chipping the ball.
Him and Sinetica with both the green. Of them. Yeah.
Yeah,
I think he did it with Sinetica. He hit it like 474 or something like that. That's crazy. Yeah, so obviously favorable conditions a couple of days ago. Not so favorable that fateful day. That was crazy. And then that's when I still marvel at him getting up and down and for six. I still. Listening to the Champions Chronicles and all that stuff, and he's consistently said, like, I never thought I was out of it. I never thought going in twice, and he still had, you know, 80 yards to get up and down for six, and he consistently said, like, I never felt out of this championship.
Yeah.
I never felt like I lost it. Yeah. I just never did, and I'm always marvel at that. That's that kind of belief. Some crazy stuff's happened there.
So there's been some heartbreak on this hole. Miller, obviously, 2 in the bunker, bogey, missed the playoff by 1.
Yeah.
Newton bogey in the last hole to, of course, this was, in a way, it cost Jack Newton his arm because he had he won that championship, beaten Watson, he would have been exempt for the 83 Open and would have gone and played, but he wasn't exempt. He obviously played the Open every year from the early 70s. He wasn't exempt that year. And he got an offer from Kerry Packer, who was the richest guy in Australia and the owner of the biggest television station, to do the commentary that week from the studio in Australia. And so he stayed behind in Australia and did the TV commentary, and the very next week he had his accident. Lost his arm in the aeroplane accident.
Oh, man.
And if he'd won that playoff with Watson, he would have been playing the Open in 83, and it never would have happened. So it changed his life in more ways than one. I've never asked him, but I've often reflected on whether he's ever thought about that. You know, if he'd won that Open in 75, it obviously would have changed your life in terms of, you know, your professional legacy and, you know, the fact that you win the Open Championship. But I've always wondered whether he ever thought about, if I'd won that thing, I never would have been in Sydney and I never would have walked into that aeroplane propeller.
Something tells me he's thought about that more than once, that's for sure.
I'm sure he probably has. So, yeah, it was,
well, brutal
home. As Vanderbilt was here, it cost Jack Newton more than it cost John Vanderbilt.
That's for sure.
If you want to look at it that way.
Yeah.
Although I've never been, I mean, John was a friend of mine. I can remember sitting in the same room I am now at the back of my house. It was 3 o'clock in the morning in Australia. And I was watching it with my wife and John was going to win the Open and we couldn't speak. It was just, how the hell did that happen? Yeah, it was just, and I've never watched it since. I can't watch it. It's just, you know, it's just horrible to think that someone's, you know, your dreams can get blown away by something as fateful as what happened to him that day. And people have since, yeah, he was stupid. He should have just taken wedge. But he got, you know, what people forget is that, or never realized, was that the ball bounced off the railing on the grandstand, but the next thing it hit was the bricks on the side of the berm.
Yeah.
If it had just gone back into the water, he would have been fine, but it bounced off the railing, landed on the bricks on the berm, which are about 6 inches wide.
Yeah.
And then kicked back across the water into the hay. If sure. it had gone back into the water,
well, he would have been dropping on the other side.
At least could have picked a lie to drop it. He would have been fine.
Yeah.
But so he not only got one of the worst bounces ever, he got two of the worst bounces ever with one shot. So, you know, those guys who sort of criticize, well, he should be at wedge. Well, of course, in retrospect, he should be at wedge. But, you know, he got two horrendous bounces there.
Nah, terrible. I mean, how many anyway, how many golf pros take aim at a grand, you know, like, they know they're going to blow it up there and they're going to blow it right. And if it goes in the grandstand, they'll take a drop. I mean, it's happened a million times. Yep. If it, you know.
I've done it before.
Yeah.
You know, and every pro who's ever played the game who's needed to bogey the last hole to make a cut or to do something of the sort, just whack it up there on the right and I can get a drop in the drop zone and make a five at least and survive the day. But yeah, he did what a lot of guys would have done.
All right, so that's 18 anyway, holes. That's
19 years ago. So.
Well, we're home. And so let's hear who you will end with, who you like. Give me your I know you know Karnak. I know that picking golfers, but is there anybody you fancy that comes to mind when you think about this year's Open Championship?
Well, there's the beguiling question of Tiger, which is, you know, it's 2007. It's a long time ago. 2008?
Yeah.
2008, Torrey Pines. It's his last one a major, a decade, and he's gone through all he's gone through in the time since. And we remember Hoylake and the discipline it took to do that. And you see a burned out brown golf course and think, can he do this again? And you watch the swings, obviously the swings on Twitter and whatever now, and you can see how his swing looks pretty good. He's a smart player who will understand how to play this golf course. And you wonder, can he, you know, if he doesn't need the driver, you know, he's the smartest player probably. You don't lose your brains in 10 years.
Nope.
So does he have the discipline and the skills to do what he did at Hoylake? So that's the Tiger question. And then you look at, you know, Spieth hasn't, the defending champion hasn't played as well as he did last year since, really, probably. You know, certainly the last few months, and I guess people question his putting and his short putting, and I haven't seen him play, so it's hard to tell how he will play. And then there are the obvious picks, you know, Justin Thomas and John Rahm, you know, the guys who are at the top of the rankings. Sergio, who's played well here before. You assume Harrington's too far past his best to do it, but again, as we've spoken about, it's going to be a question of discipline. Who picks the right way to play the golf course?
Yeah, I don't.
It's as much a mental test as anything else this week because it's obviously going to be playing short, you know, if the weather's kind, you assume the score's going to be low. I mean, there were low scores in 75.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, incredibly high scores in 99. So the conditions establish what the par is. So it's who's got the discipline to, well, who's got the best plan to play the golf course, who's got the discipline to execute it, and then who's got the skills to pull it off.
Right.
So, you know, we're all guessing at who that person's going to be. No one knows, but we're all wise in, you know, we all figured out that France was going to win the World Cup 3 weeks ago because it was obvious because they were the best team, but no one picked it 3 weeks ago. Well, they were one of 10 picks. So it's the same with the golf tournament. No one knows. Everyone's guessing. And the fascinating part of golf is that who's going to answer the Carnoustie's questions and who's going to answer the questions of this British summer, which is as dry as it's been in a long time. So we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting. You know, I mean, I think out of the couple of the top names that you said, I would say Rahm maybe has played the better of the top, although we haven't seen Dustin Johnson in a while. He hasn't played in a couple of tournaments. So we'll see. We'll see what he brings to the table. I like a guy like Rafa Cabrera-Bello, you know what I mean? He's a steady guy, and he's the thing about Tiger. I just don't know if he's mentally ready to play to win. I know he's got all the shots, and I think we'll know by Saturday where he ends up on Saturday night, because I think Saturday's been a bit of a. I mean, I know he almost won that one tournament, but let's face it, that wasn't the hardest test in golf. But this is a major championship, and I think. Be interesting to see how he handles the nerves and hitting those shots. I know he has all those shots and he has the mind that you said, and you don't lose. I still think he's the smartest golfer at the Open in Carnoustie. There's no question about it. But you know, he's older on now and just wonder how the nerves and that meshes with the execution. But so that's my only question mark about him. But I understand the allure of Tiger and the brown grass and the reminiscence of Hoylake. I just don't know if he's mentally ready to answer those questions under pressure. That's all. But I do like Rafa. Some people have been talking about Fleetwood because he won the Johnny Walker there, and that's like a totally different golf course at a totally different time of year. It's not even almost like the same place at this point. But I like Rafa for some reason. I don't know. It's a guy I keep coming back to.
Yeah. He's a beautiful swinger, no doubt.
Yeah.
Colin Byrne came for him. He came for Goosen when he won, certainly one of his, the Open at Shinnecock. So Colin's it. He's been around the block a few times as a caddy, so he's experienced. He knows it. Fleetwood, yeah, he's a terrific player. Fleetwood, he obviously played a great US Open at Shinnecock. That last day was an incredible round.
Yeah.
So he's a terrific player. Wow, he's good. He's really good.
Yeah, I like...
It wouldn't surprise it. I mean, there are so many... there have always been, you know, a lot of good players. There were a lot of good players in 1973 too when Weisskopf won, but... You know, clearly, he and Miller were the form players of that summer.
Right, right.
In 73, you know, but you go to 75 and Watson had just come off blowing the US Open at Medina. You know, he took a terrible last day there and lost the US Open. And 3 weeks later, he turned up and won the British. So, you know, it's we're all guessing.
We are. We are.
Only generally... tremendous players win the Open Championship. The golf courses ask so much mentally and so much technically and so much physically and, you know, and so much of your judgment. You know, where the ball lands this week on the fairways is going to be a long way from where it finishes, unless it flies into the fairway bunkers and they just, you're not going anywhere. But a big part of the test will be landing the ball with control and trajectory and force in the right place to run it down the fairway and keep it out of the rough. Because, of course, bouncy fairways make them much narrower than they might otherwise be.
Well,
you know, if they're soft, then they can be pretty wide. But, you know, the harder and faster they get, the narrower they get too. Because, the misses and the angles are magnified.
I know that it's all just a a guess, but I do think that, like you said, but I think we're closer to a, when we talk about a championship in these conditions and this setting, I think we're closer to a Rafa Cabrera-Bello than we are to like a Brandon Stone, you know what I mean? So I just feel like in terms of a winner, but again, there's nothing against Brandon Stone, and I'm sure he could win it, you know, I'm not going to say easily, but he could easily be a winner at, of the Open. But I just feel like in given this place under these conditions, I just feel like we're closer to that type of player than a Brandon Stone or Michael Kim who won at the John Deere, you know what I mean? That kind of out of the blue kind of thing.
Yeah, the guys who win the Scottish Open out of the blue generally don't. There've been quite a lot of them. Peter O'Malley, a good friend of mine, won the Scottish Open at Glen Eagles, and Michael Allen won it 1 year. There've been a lot of guys who've had their career week at the Scottish Open and not won the next, not even gone close the next week at the Open. Of course, Mickelson did it. He won at Castle Stewart.
Yeah, he did.
But Phil Mickelson's not. Phil Mickelson's Phil Mickelson.
he can
win any week.
Yeah, he can.
Brandon's going, no, he's not likely to win this week. Mind you, it was a hell of a round at Gullens. Shoot 60 around there to win the... That Scottish Open was jammed up going to the last day. There were 12 or 15 guys win two shots.
Yeah. It was all...
By forwards. I mean, no one saw that coming.
I turned on the television and I was psyched. I was like, this is madness. This is going to be awesome. And by the time it was over, I want to say past a turn, but it was like over. Like it just seemed like uninteresting. You know, it went from one extreme to the other in like nine holes. It was crazy. I mean, it was great to watch. Well, although we didn't get to see all his shots, but it was. I still watched it. I still love Lynx golf, so I'm going to watch it anyway. But very anticlimactic, considering. I mean, tremendous effort. But it was considering from where it started the day.
Yeah, it looked like it was going to be amazing, and it kind of a blowout, which was, boy, the guy shot 60. He's entitled to a blowout.
He is, yeah, for sure.
But it was a good preview for what we're going to see this week, which is brown, hard, bouncy, and fun.
And fun, that's the most important. Well,
as Tiger said, the greens are faster than the fairways. of course, Carnoustie was the place where Ben Hogan's told them, I've got a lawnmower at home in Texas, so I'll send it over for you. So that was, he thought the greens were a little slow. That
I forgot about that line.
53.
That was a great line. Yeah. Well, Mike, thank you so much for, this was fun. I'm glad that we did this. It was just kind of interesting to go. I know, like you said, some of it sounded like the same things, but it was sort of, it was just interesting to go hole by hole, just to sort of talk about some of the features of each hole, and just to add to people who listen, and even for us, for me, I should say, maybe not you, but for me, just adds a little depth now to the viewing experience, having discussed this. So just fun to do. So thank you very much for joining me today.
Yep. Thank you. It was good fun. I enjoyed it.
Yep. All right. That was Michael Clayton from OCCM. Enjoy the Open Championship, everyone. Have a great day.